Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the June 30 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the program today include Sherman Newland. He's with Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois. Greg Ginder is here, too, from FC Stone in Chesterfield, Missouri. And Alan Brugler is our special guest of Brugler Marketing and Management of Omaha, Nebraska. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Look us up online and find us anytime you'd like to listen to our programs at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. Well, let's begin by taking a look at some of the numbers from the USDA as they were reported this morning at 11 o'clock a.m. We'll start with you, Sherman Newland. I was most interested in the corn number that showed nearly 900 million more acres of corn. Yet, while the corn held back for a long time during the trade on Friday, it still managed to rally. What'd you make of it?
Well, I think if you look at the state-by-state breakdown where, you know, a fair amount of those acres came, that got added to, a lot of them was 250,000 over last year in North Dakota, into actually 400,000 over the March intentions report. And then you lost 500 in Illinois, and you lost 100 in Indiana, and you lost 50 in Ohio. So, you know, those are the areas that in the Dakotas where they're having so much weather trouble with the weather right now. And, the weather forecast is not boding well for those guys. As you can tell by the spring wheat market, it's been sharply higher for quite some time. So you gotta believe that the corn and soybean conditions in those areas cannot be good.
In your part of the world, in the southeastern part of Illinois, I guess that's where we'd call you. What's your weather like today, and what are conditions on the ground? I was into Chicago from here, and from roughly Paxton to Kankakee, just was small, wet, and pretty awful. And I think you're entirely different.
Well, yeah, we got an early start to the planting, but then we had way too much rain and had a lot of problems with it after that. But ever since May 24th, I know I'm in a small pocket, but right in through here, we really haven't had much over half inch of rain since then. So we're starting to tassel and put out silks, and corn's not over shoulder high, which I know the height really doesn't matter, but it does show that we've been under severe stress. And it just varies everywhere in through this part of the state. I mean, you got big corn, you got little corn, you got corn that's been replanted. It's all different stages, but everybody will tell you, for the most part, that we could really use a good root-soaking type rain in through here.
So, Alan Brugler, that's just along the state line between Illinois and Indiana, from the bottom of the state to the top of the state, dry conditions to wet conditions, but variability is kind of the word of the day for the Corn Belt, I suppose.
Yeah, it's really that way all across the Corn Belt. It's a shotgun pattern or an abstract painting, however you want to think of it, related to the thunderstorm activity. The air is pretty juicy when you get under one of these big storms. You end up with 3 or 4 inches in a hurry. Iowa was getting pounded yesterday. Here in eastern Nebraska, we've had about 2.9 inches for the month. That's a little on the light side, but Nebraska is typically going to see less rain than you do over east of the Mississippi. And of course, we've got more irrigation too. Crop has been stressed in places, and particularly in the central part of the state where it's more than South Dakota-ish in the weather pattern right now. I think the big thing to look at is corn got a lot of help today from the weather forecast, and also from the fact that wheat was up by double digits and soybean meal was up pretty sharply. So the substitutes were up, and that helped corn hold the lead. I'm always impressed when bad news fails to make the market go down.
Yeah, speaking of the wheat, that number at 45.657 million acres, down a 402 million from the planting intentions figure. That's a pretty big drop in the wheat number when you take a look at it, Greg Ginder. And it did push that market higher, and it's been led for a while by the spring wheat, which has been under dry conditions.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, that was another kind of another straw for the camel's back on that one. The spring wheat has just been unbelievably parabolic here this week. I mean, it just keeps on rallying 20, 30, 40 cents a day, with a limit move yesterday kind of leading the way higher for today. It's that dryness, that spring wheat, it is just going to be, if they don't start seeing some rains up there, I mean, this dryness is starting to creep into Canada and having effect on some of the Canadian spring wheat too. So, I mean, that coupled with the there's some dryness in the Black Sea area as well. So there's definitely a shortfall of high protein wheat in the world, and this is definitely not going to help fill that gap any.
Given that, when I take a look at what happened in both the grain stocks and the acreage report figures for the day, and Sherman Newland, I want you to take this up a little bit. You see the grain stocks helpful, I suppose, with the soybean number. The acreage didn't change from the planting intentions, which we may want to talk about because that seems like a surprise. The corn acreage was up 890 million from the acreage intentions. The wheat number was down 402 million. But all in all, for corn and soybeans, this didn't look like it was that helpful of a market mover. And can wheat support this market for very long?
Oh, I think it can, yeah. I mean, when you look at the numbers, I mean, you're talking about the wheat numbers. I mean, they're going to get extremely tight for that spring wheat crop. And you start looking at the bean carry out. I mean, you know, it's a number. I mean, if we have this hot, dry weather, I mean, that yield could start to go down. The corn number, stock number, you know, it is what it is at this point, but I think they just kind of shook it off and was looking at the weather more than anything. But the wheat, I think it can continue to go higher still, and I think, you know, the funds are just probably now getting out of their net short positions in wheat, I would say, after today. So maybe they might want to turn around and go long, kind of the same way in the corn market. They're still pretty short, but they're, you know, have room to cover, same way with the beans. So I think from that standpoint, plus it's the end of the month, you know, end of the quarter, you got a holiday coming up. I think it all just, you know, led into, you know, buying of the market. Crude oil market was up too. So, I mean, I'd say all in all, the CRB index was probably, you know, flashing signals of things to go higher. So it just led to a higher day.
Hey, I think that you yesterday, maybe, Alan, were on Chip Flory's show. Is that right? Were you on there with Joe Vaclavic or earlier?
Earlier in the week,
Joe was hosting, I believe. And the corn number didn't surprise you so much in acreage, did it?
No, we were looking for something over 90, 90 and a half even, because we have had a tendency to find corn acres in this June report versus the March report. In fact, 11 of the last 14 years, we've had more acres in June than in March. Now, you know, you had an argument there was some prevent plant going on in Illinois and Indiana, but I was hearing mostly replant rather than people filing for claims. So I just thought that the bias was towards more acreage here in June for corn, and that's turned out to be the case. It's also important to remember that we had several million acres that were missing in that March intentions report. We had been 316.9 million, and now we're at 318.2. And last year we were, I believe, 319 and change off the top of my head. So the point is there was some acreage missing that people didn't know what they were going to do back in March. And that does typically tend to come into the numbers in June, and most of it, 888,000, of it went to corn.
Greg Ginder, when you looked at the grain stocks number for corn, it was 5.225 billion bushels. That's what was left in the bin, both on and off farm, as of June the 1st. So it's a bit of a census, so it's really a pretty good tally. That number was on the high end of expectations. And given the rally we have and the number of bushels that are left yet to be sold, I suppose a lot of that's yet to be marketed as well, should producers consider this an opportunity to make old crop corn sales?
Yeah, I would say they need to be closer to making a move on the trigger here than just kind of waiting back. I mean, the average trade range was about 4.6 to 5.36. So yeah, it did come in real close to the higher end of the estimates. I think given the strength that we've seen in wheat and now the beans have definitely found their legs. I mean, there's some opportunities for some higher corn prices here, but I think all in all, it in the next, say, 6 to 8 weeks, I would expect to see a little better prices than what we may have now, but I'm not getting overly optimistic. For the next marketing year, there could be better prices on the horizon yet still. But as far as, when we get into August, I think a guy should take a real strong look at getting sold, either in the first part or definitely, just get some pricing orders in and start, whittling away at this. You don't want to try to jam it all in at one time at the end of the year.
Are you of the same mind, Sherman Newland?
For old crop corn? Well, yeah, old crop corn. The problem with that is basis has gotten softer with this little bit of a bump up. I think there's been some price movement on that last run up. I don't know how much before we had this big sell-off here lately, but I don't know how much is actually left out there in the countryside for farmers to move. I think, like I said, a lot of it got
2.384 billion bushels.
Yeah, I think, it will come to market eventually. I do think if we can get a rally, some more up through here, I think we have potential. But then, yes, you have to look at getting it sold, yeah. Up. I think we can still get to some higher levels. I mean, if you look at the
farmers out your way tend to hold corn in storage a lot longer than they do in our part of the world. Will they be moving corn? And should they?
Well, yeah, this is the world capital of holding grain for 2 or 3 or 4 years. Some of the Minneapolis wheat that's being sold the last month was from 2014. But, the problem is we've got the weaker basis out here, too, particularly as you go north. The basis, up until recently, you were looking at 60 under basis for corn and soybeans in the Dakotas. Whereas in Ohio, some of my guys were getting 10 over. So that's a huge differential in different parts of the country. We're looking for, if we look at an average annual trading range in corn, this is what we call our techno-fundamental forecast. It's $1.15 a bushel when you've got stocks over 10% use. And given where we're at on the USDA cash average price, that would suggest we could still see $4.15 for old crop. Front month futures, and so if you're in the 370s or 380s, it's not compelling case to sell. You're in the top third or top 40%, but it's not what you would expect to see as a top. So, you put that together with the weather forecast and this somewhat unreliable forecast for 110 degrees in the Dakotas around July 10th. And you say, okay, if new crop gets a little more stress, old crop will get over the $4 mark. And so we're basically sitting on our hands here. We've got new crop, we've got $4.410 puts as a floor, but we're really not wanting to do anything right here.
How about for soybeans, new crop sales?
Well, new crop, we've got a lot of short calls. We're short 80% of the crop at 1040 and up on call sales. But, of course, that's limited protection to the downside. It just gets you paid for waiting. My concern with the beans is we do have a declining regression channel on the weekly chart. And that's resistance in the 940s for the front month, and we got to 940s today. So this is the place where the quants are going to sell it if they think that downtrend is still intact. And being the first of the month on Monday, you've got a chance to change that trend. But I'm down to the last 5% old crop, and I may move it if we can't break that downtrend.
Right. So the difference here and the July 4 weekend tends to be a weekend where trends change. Did the trend change early, and do you count today as the beginning of a different trend change? And are the trends different for corn and soybeans? And Greg Ginder, I guess maybe I'll ask you that question.
Well, that is that's one of the things I said last week to a lot of people who were looking at downward trending markets and kind of wondering the same thing. I know that I have talked to a lot of the older generation, and they live by that mantra. So what they were glad to see was that it was a downward trending market into this report. So I will have to go with the Punxsutawney theory, and I will definitely say that I believe that we are looking at higher markets turning the corner on the 4th of July.
And for soybean, will it just follow along?
Absolutely, 100%. I think the soybeans have definitely been they've taken their turn in the woodshed here over the last couple weeks or months. So I think given that acreage report, what I also found interesting about the soybeans was the where they put I believe it was 400,000 more beans in. 300,000 more acres of beans in North Dakota. And, you know, if the weather guys are right, it is dry up there. And I don't know how much benefit those acres are going to have to the overall production. So, yeah, I think all signs point to higher on these grains. And if for no other reason, this wheat will just basically add a little fuel to the fire.
I agree. I mean, I think we're going higher as we come back first the next week, unless these weather forecasts really change. I mean, technically, I mean, corn and beans, I mean, corn anyway, closed over its 50-day and 200-day. We had higher weekly closes. We had higher monthly closes in all three, corn, beans, and wheat. Corn by not much, up by a penny, but wheat was up 78.5 cents, and November beans were up 36.5 cents for the month. So I think, you know, with the weather and the problems we have out there with this crop, I mean, it may look good in certain spots, but I know we've had just too many records being broke already. We've had record early rainfall, record early heat, record replant, record re-replant, you know, too much rain in certain areas, and then now the drought's starting to set in other places. We got seedling disease, we got shallow roots, you got southern rust starting to come up in this corn. You got bean disease starting to set in. You got frog eye and pythium coming around. So I think there's a lot of things can still go wrong with this crop, and maybe not be a disaster, but you know, definitely bring us down off these trend line yields in corn and beans both. I mean, I think we're going higher.
And yet you have large ending stocks for both corn and soybeans at this point, and they will change some in the WASDE figures for the month of July based on these numbers. How much do we think they can change? I guess, has anybody done some forward figuring on this yet?
Yeah, I've done a little bit. The thing you got to be careful with on these stocks reports is that the obvious answer, i.e. how much is you surprise the trade, doesn't translate very well to year-end ending stocks estimates. USDA tends to not move that far at one time. Preliminary run suggests that the corn stocks should go back over 2.3 billion bushels for an old crop with this adjustment here. The beans, I've got somewhere between 415 and 440, so that would be lower than where USDA was the most recently. The wild card there is residual use. It had been kind of popular to talk about USDA underestimated last year's soybean crop. That was going to for sure show up in today's report. Well, it didn't. And in fact, my quarterly table, I had to use a 50 million bushel residual in order to make the numbers fit. So that would imply almost that the stock was, or the production was smaller than what USDA told us in January. So again, the direction suggests a little tighter old crop soybean stocks, a little higher corn stocks than what we had in the June WASDE, based on my preliminary run through here.
And you, despite this, are thinking higher prices for both corn and soybeans?
Yeah, I'm a little more cautious on the beans. I think the 400, let's say it's 425 million. That's still a lot of buffer. We're not going to see very good exports for soybeans in July or August. South American overhang is just huge. Sepok Nov exports are not going to be what they were a year ago. Beans are going to have a hard time breaking 10 other than just speculative activity. I don't want to discount that. If their funds are short and we chase them out of shorts and they go long 100,000 contracts, that'll move the market. But I'm not quite as convinced of the bull story on beans right here, just from the fundamentals. And we have to remember that the beans are pretty much an August crop relative to yield development. You can have a 2012 in July and still have a pretty good crop if it's the right temperature and you get rain in August for the beans.
Yeah, so you understand that I'm just looking at the fundamental side of it, trying to understand what the USDA released today, what that means to the grain stocks or to the ending stocks numbers for this year and how that translates going forward. And I guess I don't see that big of a move in really what the stocks have done. And from your figures, they go higher. I thought that probably would be the case with corn. Yet I've got everybody saying, hey, wait a second, this is going to move and it's going to move to the upside. So if that's the case, driven by the wheat, and does it have to have the weather to follow up?
I think it has to have the weather to help follow it up. I mean, one thing we've been kind of, you know, really looking at a lot are the crop ratings that come out every week. And so far they've been, pretty darn low for this time of the year for everything. And then especially if you break it down state by state by state to see what states are in trouble. So I think, you know, last week we didn't come in a whole lot higher. I'm basically unchanged on some stuff. I think if we come in here, we won't get the crop ratings, I don't believe, now till Wednesday instead of Monday. So if those come in and there's really not a whole lot of improvement in there, I think that's going to kind of start to tip the hat a little bit of maybe what direction USDA may go with their yield on this next report. So, but yes, I mean, we're going to have really good weather. I mean, if we, you know, if the weather is still going to be hot and dry, then the yield can continue to shrink. But, you know, I think, you know, we need to be, we're going to be under trend line yield, I think, unless something just really remarkable happens weather-wise. I mean, I think we were at 165. I wouldn't be, there have been some private outfits that have been using satellite images at 163 and a half on corn. I wouldn't argue with that. I wouldn't be surprised if eventually, if the weather stays hot and dry, that it's under that at some point in time because of, you know, like I said previous, of all the problems we've had in this corn, trying to get it, you know, up and going good.
Let's move on to our final word for the day. Greg Ginder of FC Stone, let's start with you.
Yeah, it was a very good day for the commodities today. It was all green lights and everybody seemed to have smiles on their faces. So it is true, the beans, there is a better export book that we need to have on there. The PNW is very light on their Chinese program right now, and I think that does definitely add some overhead pressure on soybeans. But it's going to be interesting to see what the weather brings us here for the next 4 weeks, because if we're looking at drier conditions across definitely some of the higher producing areas of soybeans, it will be interesting to see. But for right now, not to be too overly optimistic, all signs do point to higher.
Alan Brugler from Brugler Marketing and Management.
I think one thing we have to remember is that crop condition ratings do usually decline in July. Okay, the Brugler 500 index is typically down each of the 4 weeks in July and often into the first 2 weeks of August. So we have to be a little careful about reading yield impacts on declining ratings over the next couple of weeks. Our model does suggest that we're probably 168 or less right now based on the current ratings. And if they do work down into the end of July, that number will shrink. But, it's premature to read anything in the 165 or lower based at least on the crop condition ratings we have right now. I do agree with what was said earlier on the show that the old crop stocks are a boat anchor or a ball and chain, whatever you want to think of, that you've got to drag along with any new crop story, because they do give us a pretty good cushion. That 2.3 billion bushels of corn is 20-some bushels to the acre that's already in the bin.
And finally, Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about selling old crop a while ago. I mean, I think at some point in time, yeah, we have to take a look at getting that done. I mean, but we recommended earlier in the week to be, you know, buying some sales back, bringing some things with calls, and that would also help with that weaker basis that is taking place now in this corn. So, you know, if you wanted to lighten up the load on some cash stuff and re-own it with options in case this thing wants to continue higher, that's something we've been doing here personally. But, you know, it'll all depend on what the weather ends up doing. And we don't really think right now we're going to end up with anything close to trend line yield in corn. And it's, you know, it's out on the, don't know yet on the soybeans. So, but it'll all depend on the weather.
You know, I look at this thing, and I guess I sound that way on the air too. I keep looking at it thinking, dang, those numbers remain big for the ending stocks, and they haven't changed yet. It's the part is that they haven't changed yet. That's my biggest problem with it. And I don't know. I just keep wondering about it more than anything
else. Well,
have
you seen the hog market? I mean,
yeah, the hog market. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a moonshot. I mean,
the fundamentals are just totally shot out.
You got to be feeding them things something.
And the oats, they jumped like
oats are limited up. I mean,
yeah.
Yes, I mean a lot of this is going to be based on how the weather's going to
so
be going
why
forward.
So here's the real question. Why did the market react the way it did today? I mean, it didn't do this until after the numbers came in.
Plus the funds are already short corn, already short beans, and wheat didn't give it
technical.
Up. If you watch that wheat, it came right back.
Yeah. It's the beans were, they just took such a beating for the last month or so. Everybody, I don't think anybody really wanted to put an eight handle on it. And you can see that today that, you know, they're looking for any excuse to buy it. Plus, yeah, wheat, man, they just take a look over at the wheat board and they go, why not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you may be onto something there. You know, if you look at kind of rotate around the commodities, you've had pretty good bull moves in cattle. You had one in cotton. You have one in Minneapolis wheat. Now the other two wheats are chasing it because the spread's getting too wide. You know, it's kind of a flavor of the month, get long and milk it for all it's worth. So maybe it's corn or soybeans turn.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, you got the hog, you got kind of crude oil.
That means you have to take advantage sooner rather than later.
If it turns out it's corn's turn in July, you go with it and then you sell it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, somewhere
it's
out there, you want to take a look at it, and you don't want to lose sight of that July 18 contract on wheat either. I mean, it's up there at 570. I mean, if you can start getting a six on it, I mean, guys got to start looking at that because you're going to get an increase in wheat acres, I would say, this fall.
Well, the thing I keep coming back to on wheat is we had a 9-year cycle low last fall, all right? So, which tells me that anything under $4 was actually too cheap. All right, we haven't really broken the world ending stocks. The U.S. ending stocks were bigger today, 1.186. But the market, the price-wise, is moving up, okay? So I think that's symptomatic. It's we're coming out of that cycle low. The bias is going to be to the upside. You're still going to get sell-offs, but maybe things were a little too cheap in wheat. Maybe $6 isn't really that cheap in the broader multi-year scale of looking at things.
Somebody was saying they're
keep waving around that $24 2007-2008 Minneapolis contract like that's the target too. So, you know, when people keep looking at three times what we're sitting on now. I mean, yeah, I'll be honest, guys, we're just buying Minneapolis wheat up 30 or 40 today, you know, with almost an eight handle on it for just no reason just to try to get on board with whatever's coming.
Well, yeah.
I don't know if go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, I kind of got an $11 mark on this Minneapolis wheat. I mean, if you go from the crop condition ratings of how it is, you know, it kind of rivals 2002. You know, and before today anyway, we'd only moved about price-wise, percentage-wise, about half of what we did at that point with crop ratings down there. So I think there's more up in this, in the Minneapolis wheat. You know, was saying this morning that Australia is talking about cutting on wheat acres. I mean, then there's problems in the EU and with their wheat and the weather. So it just all, you know, pointed to higher prices.
2011 high in Minneapolis is 1120, so that kind of fits with your number. The other thing I was going to point out, though, is if you looked at, I haven't seen the commitment traders this afternoon yet, but last week there were zero spec shorts in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The reportable specs were all long, no shorts. All right? That's not very sustainable, but it's also pretty symptomatic of the bull runs I was talking about earlier. Cattle had a similar thing where funds kept loading longs and weren't adding any shorts.
Yeah, I mean, and they were just a little bit net short still Chicago wheat, but now you got to figure they got to be long a little bit.
Yeah, I think we're probably a little
after
long
today. So, you know, if funds want to keep coming after this stuff, you know, driven by the weather, then they could do the same thing with corn and take it back to, you know, unchanged as far as the traders net, you know, short. Same way with the beans, possibly. I don't know about that, but. Depends on the weather.
Well, if you guys excuse me, I got a couple editorial deadlines staring me in the face here.
Hey, I left the recorder running. Anybody got a problem if I leave all this up on the website?
No.
Got it? Okay.
Open mic.
You know, why not? Yeah, let's go for it.
Infamous open mic.
Well, I didn't realize I left it all, but I looked down and I was like, oh, it's still running. Okay.
That's what they always say, Todd.
Yeah. Well, I could have just posted it and not told you, but... All right. Hey, thank you, guys. I appreciate
it's all right.
Yep. Bye-bye.
All right.
Thanks, Todd.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Yep. Thanks, guys.